Where do you feel most at home in the world?
Where do I feel most at home in the world? It's a really good question. I feel most at home in my mind. You know, I mean, when I'm imagining, when I'm writing, I feel most at home because the memories are there and they're fresh and I can experience everything that I've ever been through in one moment in the writing of a poem.
Hello and welcome to The Right Question, a radio program and podcast featuring authors from the Western United States. Our funding comes from Humanities Montana and members of Montana Public Radio. I'm Sarah Aronson, talking with Sherwin Bitsui about his collection of poems, Dissolve. Stay tuned to hear his deeply resonant and innovative voice in poetry today. Dissolve is your third published collection after Shapeshift and Flood Song. I want to know what it means for you to be a poet in your tradition, in your family, in your life.
Being a poet, for me, I suppose I haven't necessarily found the definition of poet yet in either in Navajo language. So I'm still trying to find exactly what being a poet means. I feel I'm an artist. I can sense that part of it. And what I do with language, what I do by constructing these poems, is very similar to how a painter wields a brush and a sculptor chisels a rock, or a composer, you know, would string notes together to create some sort of harmony. You know, and poetry in my context, in the Navajo context, it's difficult to really define poetry in Navajo language because there really isn't a word for poetry. So I'm always caught between those two definitions. And it's always this sort of entanglement with the mystery of exactly what poetry is or what language is. And as I compose works and create bodies of work, it always never fully reveals itself in the way that I want to see something reveal itself clearly. So I'm always drawn to what makes the words appear on the page the way they do, what creates the combinations of imagery, what creates the tone. All of this comes from outside of the poem, and the poem is residual. It is what's left, and that's where the beauty lies.
Will you take us into the mystery of your work and read a poem?
Yes. This is from Dissolve. An elegy hands me a busy signal. Its handle broke me from my tooth. I chew its answers until I taste cracks in the chrome outline of a sky without hands. Notice every link in the trail to here is a bullet's path to back there. The hue of off-color messages collapsed. What crows above the city's M-dash, doused in whale oil, hangs here, named nameless. Covering its sobs with corral dirt, I imagine a canyon floor, corn stalks growing in rows along a sunlit sandstone wall, in the far corner of a room late in life. A field of moonlight, double parked in snowmelt, absorbs coyote fur as it smokes through pincers, disassembling, heaving from breathing. Capped with nesting swallows, pollen clouds barb the waning moon's tapered gown to a crown of krill and sea foam. Amber clouds of bone marrow, lathered over corn husk, are crushed sideways into a toothache, where waning daylight's tongue scent bleeds through a fly-papered horizon. 1 year before last, I noticed a foot tied with horsehair in the shade of a cedar tree, horse milk dripping from the bull-whipped gavel near it. I replace what I saw with what I heard, pull out a letter sent from ourself to myselves, and for a second, the flattened field is chandeliered by desert animal constellations.
Your work has been called that of the urban Navajo experience. What are you translating here?
I'm translating the present, and it's the only truth I know. It's the only thing I know. My poems are all things that are present in my time and space and imagination. I need this time to compose the works, or should I say my poems need this time. This time, this moment is the air and the blood and the circuitry of my poetics. I did grow up in a traditional Navajo family on the Navajo reservation. My grandparents didn't speak English. I am fortunate enough to know my language and know that I speak a language that is of this hemisphere and of this land. And that root system is deep. That root system, the connections I make with that language to my time and my place, sometimes goes up against English in a very profound way. I feel the two languages orient oneself to different modes or different relationships with place, family, community. And somewhere within that translation or transmission, that somewhere between there is some energy that happens, and I feel like my poems are trying to contain all those elements and harmonize them and make them beautiful.
Of the elements that stood out to me when I was reading Dissolve, you manage to have pawn shops and pixels and carbon footprints coexist with corn stalks and horse bridles and hair and smoke. And there's violence, too. There are hands that are glocked. There are bullet blasts and gun shadows, chemical burns, maced skulls. I want to know the context of the violence for you.
Again, I'm writing from this time. Yeah. I'm writing from this moment. And violence is everywhere. Historically, in the news, in my life, in my personal history. It's something that I find ever present in my existence, and I'm not removed from it. I live in that kind of world, and I'm human, so I respond to it in a very compassionate way. There is a lot of violence in Dissolve intentionally, and I feel that a poem written of the moment needs to allow everything to be in its frame. And within Dissolve, I think everything is there because that is the energy of our world. That is the matrix of our moment. And there's a lot of violence also to the earth. And I think the earth is responding.
Will you read another poem?
Sure. Bench's face before. I pushed into a coin slot, the sound of pills pebbling an emergency room floor. My thinking stills. A new oxygen fills my reasons for stalling. Tearing apart cloud names, pierced fog commands, douse the inferno's ribs with opaque forgetting. Clip dawn from the book's dusk. Unfasten the song's empty auditorium over a garden of mute foals. Tearing apart fog names, pierced cloud sings. Let them shriek from their hinges. Let them slice their gills open with flint knives and circle their ghosts as frog-skinned antelope. Let them drag their legs over a trail that has soaked up blood since land began crawling out of anthills. This plate's shape is pond for bread. Paper lungs collapse on bird claws, clacking on my sleeve's ash. When they seed guns with powdered bone awls, who will be injured by such blue dark? Brush fires graze upon a fleet of soft-footed elk. Under them, a hush returns, sistering everybody's blood clots to each other. Always the swarm when we crest the story's hive. Always smoke roosting among swallows nesting in cupped hands.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to a conversation with Sherwin Bitsui about his collection of poems, Dissolve. I'm Sarah Aronson. This is The Right Question. Our full conversation can be found online at mtpr.org, where you can also subscribe to our podcast and follow us on Facebook. One of the ways I know your work is by your verbs. In Shapeshift, you river. In this collection, you use the verbs to swan, to mountain, to window, to sister, and to sunlight. I'm thinking about your use of language. What else can you say about where your language comes from and how, as a speaker, you don't rely on the narrative I. You step out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
What do you know about that instinct?
I think it's rather intuitive. I have learned over time to step out of the way of my own poems and trust the poem. And I think when I was teaching here at the University of Montana, I remember at one point in the MFA graduate class, I asked everybody to be vulnerable. That's one thing that I know about poetry often is you can't will a poem. You can't make it happen. At least I can't make a poem happen. A poem happens on its own terms. And a poem guides you. It guides you into spaces and scenes or images that are sometimes difficult to see. So the the strategies for creating a poem or the ways that I use the verbs is that the whole world has some force and energy to it, that even language can move you towards something. And you just have to flip the switch on and allow those things to be energized with whatever force moves them through. I think language has that ability, so they do have movement. I mean, I would be really happy if we could verb everything and see the world that way. You know, imagine if somebody said, please sunlight this room. What does that mean? That changes everything in the way we see things. I know there's that particular poem in Dissolve where this mountain stands before me mountaining. And I always look at mountains, and mountains are always themselves mountaining every day, you know. Somebody mentioned yesterday at the writer's retreat that the Teton Mountains grow 4 inches every year or something. I might have misheard that, but I really love that image, and I love what that means, because over the span of somebody's lifetime, those mountains also grew several feet. So I think that's really beautiful.
I'm so glad you brought up teaching here, because full disclosure to our listeners, you were my teacher during my own poetry MFA, and I very much remember the day you had us pick a partner in class and look into their eyes for minutes on end, to the point of discomfort. And I remember you said that that's how a poet or a writer should face the blank page, mm-hmm. with that level of openness and vulnerability. What other strategies do you use to stay open in a world that often asks us to close?
Vulnerability is a power. It's a strength. And yes, for the poem itself, we do have to look straight at things. We can't necessarily avoid the reality. Even though my poems may seem imaginative in so many ways, everything in the poem I feel exists in some way in the world. There's a line later on in an image of children in floating cages with police dogs barking at them. And I wrote that image years ago, I don't remember when. Probably like 5 years ago, I don't know when I came to that image. But it was shocking. I'd rather see that in a poem, mm-hmm. than in real life. Mm-hmm. So when I saw the children on the border, the children of these migrant families in cages, or to even have knowledge of them in cages, was more shocking. And it really threw me off. But I write those things in poems, and they're okay. But if you if you actually see them in real life, it's very frightening. So I think when I was in this particular class and when that moment happened, I wanted to just show my students that you have to look deep and straight and not avert your eyes. That's the moment when a poem occurs. And you have to find a way to transmit that particular feeling into the blank page or onto the blank page. Because it's a great privilege to be a poet. And it's a very careful art. And it's not just something one does or spits out, you know, it's something one actually walks with and carries for a long time, and is very careful with every detail of it, every sound, every texture, every word, Every aspect of a poetic line matters and has concreteness in the world. It becomes a made thing.
One of the other ways I know you is through the sound of your voice and the way you use your voice to transmit. During readings, it's almost as if you go into a trance. What is that experience like for you? And do you have a sense of your intention when you stand before, you know, a group or a person of one to read?
I feel that the poem is most alive for me at the moment of reading. I feel like I'm moving in time and in space, and these opportunities to share my work with an audience is always the most important thing. I mean, I love the book. I love having a book of poetry, but I feel like there's something that happens when a poet is reading their own work to an audience. And I see that as the most vital experience or the most vital exchange. And it's the moment that I can't just not do correctly, and I have to give it everything that I have. And I also have to allow myself to be open to the audience because they've been so generous to come to my reading. When it happens, it happens. And I always also think about one of my favorite poets, Federico Garcia Lorca, who talks about duende. And I think I've been really interested in what he meant by duende. I suppose it means like ghost or spirit. But I thought about it in terms of like, what does it mean for that particular moment when the poem is being read? I try to locate myself back in the moment where I wrote those poems. I try to take myself back to a particular tension or a particular feeling that I had when I was writing the work. And I want to locate myself in that space because that is where the opening happened in this time or in this reality. That's where the vulnerability happened. And of course, I move forward in time and I revise, but my compass is always pointed at that particular moment. And that particular moment is interesting because that was where the trigger happened. And that's where the tension is. And that's where the truth of it is. And that's where the shock is, or that's where the beauty is, or the love, whatever quality we can give it, emotional quality. And I tried to bring that into the space of a room. And then the poem is alive and is light for that particular moment, or it's dark for that particular moment of the reading. And I hope that I can always give that. It's not always easy. I do put a lot of energy into my readings, and I think I hope more people do that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they do.
Will you read There's a Way Out?
So this particular fragment from Dissolve is probably the one moment where the speaker offers some exit from the poem. And there's just some imperatives. There is a way out. Walk the dirt road into cerulean dawn. Tap the windows of cars and trucks rattling down Highway 77 with clear fingerprints. And clasp the nine eyes of the desert shut at the intersection of then and now. Ask, will this whirlwind connect to that one, making them cousins to the knife? Will lake mist, etched on flakes of flood-birthed moonlight, hang its beard on a tow truck, hoisting up a buck, butterflies leaking from its nostrils, dark clouds draining off its cedar coat?
I follow you on social media, and you champion other Indigenous writers like Tommy Orange and Orlando White, Layli Long Soldier, Joan Kane, and Therese May Mayotte. And in the back of Therese's critically acclaimed book, Heart Berries, she's interviewed by poet Joan Kane. And part of the conversation is about what it means to be a Native writer And I wanted to ask you about any of the tension you may or may not feel about making your work accessible to both a dominant culture and an indigenous voice or expression.
I think first there's always just the work itself. Make that work. I try to structure it to where it becomes a kind of concrete thing in the world. And once the thing is made, people can see it and that it's fully formed. And their approach, whether they're ready to come to it, is their choice. So I don't write for a particular audience in mind. I write to create something that hopefully transcends experience. I want a poem that can move in the world and be in the world and remain. And often it's a different road than writing things that can be consumed immediately. So I'm in this for the long haul, and I think 3 books into it, I think people can now see what I've been doing for the past 20 years. So at first there's a lot of scratching of heads and, you know, but I have a project in mind, and it's a long one. I'm writing one particular poem, and I hope that I'm crafting the poems well enough that they remain.
Sherwin Bitsui is Diné, from the Navajo Reservation in White Cone, Arizona. He is the author of 3 poetry collections and has received a Whiting Writers Award and a Lannan Literary Fellowship, among others. He teaches at the Institute of American Indian Arts. Look for more information about him and his work at mtpr.org, where you can also subscribe to our podcast and follow us on Facebook. Many thanks to Humanities Montana for supporting us since 2008. And thanks to you for listening. I'm Sarah Aronson, and this has been The Right Question.
The Right Question is produced by Sarah Aronson, Beth Ann Austin, studio engineer and production assistant. The music in this program was written and performed by John Floridis.